This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Cycling is our focus this hour. By cycling, biking advocates from Stanton, Harrisonburg, and Charlottesville are with us. There's a new law affecting how motorists and cyclists are to share Virginia roadways that our guests will be sure to describe, and some proposals that have not yet made it into law for which these advocates are still pushing. But maybe the key question is this: how do you see biking in Virginia? If you've got ideas for how to get more people pedaling along, how to make biking safer, what would make you more comfortable getting you and your family spending more time on two wheels in your part of the Commonwealth, then we'll be hoping to add your voice to this Virginia Pedaling Update edition of Insight, coming up right after the news. Great to be with you. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. Got thoughts about cycling? How to get more people traveling on two wheels? What might make it easier, safer, more fun? Then this certainly would be the time to make note of our phone-in line, 888-WMRA-TALK. That's 888-967-2825. Later in the hour, we'll be connecting with a data scientist who's helped devise an intriguing research methodology that could lead to better biking safety on city streets across the country. But first, we welcome back to the Insight Studio past president of the Virginia Bicycling Federation and longtime member of Bike Charlottesville, Ruth Stornetta, plus longtime activist with the Harrisonburg-based Shenandoah Valley Bicycle Coalition, Thomas Jenkins, and member of the Stanton City Council, as well as a cycling enthusiast himself, Eric Curran. Thank you all so much for making time for us.
Happy to be here.
Thanks, Tom.
Well, Eric, you first then. Why are you so interested in improving conditions for cyclists in your part of Virginia, in the Stanton area?
So I'm a cyclist myself, number one. It's a little bit of self-interest. I also want to see my kids be able to ride around town a little more easily so my wife and I don't have to drive them everywhere by car, especially our younger daughter who volunteers at the Stanton Augusta Rescue Squad. We're very proud of her, but it starts at 6 a.m., so we'd love it if she could ride her bike. But anyway, our citizens want it. They showed up to our city council chambers a few months ago, and they packed the place. They gave a very well-put-together presentation, which had a lot of data, a lot of research that showed how making your city more friendly to cycling has so many benefits. It not only is helpful on transportation, for a lot of people don't have cars, and they need a way to get around. And in small cities like ours that don't have as much transit as a bigger place, sometimes bikes are people's best option for transportation. But for other people, it's a choice between their car and riding their bike. And of course, riding your bike saves energy, it reduces congestion, and it helps people's health. And it's fun. So our citizens, they show that they want us to be more bike-friendly. And this group of bicyclists also offered to help. They offered to raise money for grants, to get sharrows painted on the road, or to get bike lanes put in, or other bike amenities. So it was a very persuasive approach. But aside from that, you know, I really bought their arguments about economic development, that bicycling is a great way to help make your community more prosperous, for businesses to relocate there, or for people who telecommute. For example, in Stanton, we have a lot of people who teach at JMU, but they decide to live in Stanton because they like the small town quality of life. And so one of the things they like and that other people like, people who tend to be cultural creative type people, high paid people who start high tech companies, is they want amenities. They want cafes. They want walkable streets. They like attractive architecture and parks. And they really like places to be bikeable because they're into biking, they're into community, and they're into the whole vibe around bicycling. And so for us to be competitive, you know, I think we need to do a better job of being bike friendly.
That's absolutely true. There are many companies nowadays who could locate anywhere in the United States, and one of their top priorities is to find a place where people can ride a bike or walk to work easily. And that's one of the reasons that World Stride just moved into Charlottesville a couple of years ago, is Charlottesville was considered to be a bikeable community. So it is. It definitely has economic benefits for your community right up front. as well as long-term benefits for people's health and happiness.
Eric, one thing I thought was interesting you mentioned was providing some freedom for yourself in terms of not having to always drive your daughter somewhere. And I think that's something a lot of people have lost that ability and are kind of always having to drive their kids places. And because the kids don't have the ability to walk or to ride. And I think that's something, you know, a generation ago that was kind of built in. And we've lost that. And it would be great to see that come back to, you know, our communities.
So you who are listening, when was the last time you were on a bicycle? What do you remember about it? Was it last week, a few hours ago, or many, many years ago? And if it was that last one, what would it take to get you out riding again? 888-WMRA-TALK is the easy way to remember our number. In all numbers, that's 888-967-2825. Or you can post to us on Facebook, where we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. Cycling enthusiasts Ruth Stornetta, Eric Curran, and Thomas Jenkins are our guests. My name, by the way, is Tom Graham, and we already have some Facebook posts. This is from Sarah. This might be for you, Eric. Sarah, well, I guess it's for anybody. Sarah says, I guess I was spoiled in other places in the country I lived because I could always find fairly flat places to ride. I can do hills, but it helps if I can warm up before hitting the slopes. Are there any non-hilly locales where a good bike ride can be had near Stanton?
So Gypsy Hill Park, which is in Stanton, is a great, pretty flat place. Now, sometimes it can be kind of busy, so you may want to go in the morning or times when there isn't a lot of traffic in there. I like to ride Route 11. Route 11 must be there for a reason. You know, it was the old Indian Trail and the old Pioneer Trail, and it's pretty flat as far as valley rides go.
You know? Well, I guess if you're used to going around downtown Stanton, by comparison, Route 11 is going to be flat. But it seems to me to have a fair number of hills. It's not Kansas.
No, and I always say, I was telling Thomas this before the show, 1 mile in the valley is worth 5 miles in Iowa.
You got to remember that hills give you views. When you think about how beautiful and scenic the riding is around here, it's because we have hills. You know, think about what it's like to ride through Kansas, and you can, that image versus seeing our lovely Blue Ridge Mountains. It's a big difference.
I can identify with what Sarah is saying, however. I do recall back in the days when I did a lot of riding, it was in places where there were flat areas to kind of get warmed up. And the last time I was doing lots of riding was probably back more 10 years ago when I lived in northern Pennsylvania. And there were some pretty big hills there that once I was out riding for a while, I would have no problem taking on. But it seems to me that this question is similar to something that we got for you, Ruth Stornetta. The last time that you were here, somebody calling in and asking, is there a place near Charlottesville where I can take my family and we don't have to struggle going up and down hills?
And I think I recommended the Riverview Park, which is a really nice several long mile long paved trail down by the Ravanna River. There's parking there, and it's a really nice family oriented area. There are going to be other users out on that trail though. Another place I like to send people is Sugar Hollow, which is out past Whitehall. It's a beautiful flat dead end road that goes along the Mormons River. It's sort of like taking a ride in the park, except that you're on the road. So those are two places.
Well, and if you listening, wherever you live, know of a place that people who want to at least avoid hills at first can get started, the idea of there being someplace relatively flat in much of our listening area is something that lots of people are not aware of. So if you're aware of it, a particularly good biking area of any kind in your community, we'd love to hear from you. So, Sarah, thank you so much for that question. And it looks like our first call is coming in from Stanton. David, thank you for joining us. Your question or comment for Eric Curran, Thomas Jenkins, and or Ruth Stornetta, please.
Thank you very much. My question has to do with the recent discussion and the stamp and paper regarding limiting vehicular traffic in Gypsy Hill Park so that it would be more conducive to bike riders and pedestrians. And wondered if the panelists had any updates or ideas or opinions on that issue. I personally would be in favor of doing anything possible to limit that vehicular traffic to only those who had some real good reason for taking a vehicle into the park. And but I get the feeling that that's probably not the prevalent position. So I just wanted to get their opinion on that.
Stanton City Councilman Eric Curran.
So thanks, Dave. My wife actually put out a petition asking that for some limited hours that the park be restricted to bicycles and pedestrians. And a lot of discussion came out of that. We were surprised at how interested people are in this issue. So I think it's opened up a discussion in Stanton. I don't think anything is going to happen in the near future right away. But I think you know, Gypsy Hill Park has become very popular over the years. We've layered amenity and amenity on top of amenity in the park. And we haven't really looked at the traffic patterns or the parking or, you know, all the different kinds of users. So it's a well-beloved space, as many city parks are. And I think we're going to have a good civil discussion about ways that we can all share this park, you know, given the amount of different kinds of users that there are now.
David seems to be saying that his expectation is he'd be in the minority in favoring this. Do you have any sense of where people, majority, minority, are falling so far in this discussion?
It's hard to say. I understand that this issue has been brought up sometimes in the past, and you know, I don't think much has been done to change things because there were strong feelings on both sides. So I know some people do feel strongly on both sides now, and I think it will be, I think we really need to have a, you know, non-emotional, fact-based discussion where we all realize that we want this park to be good for everybody. We want the maximum number of people to be able to use it for the maximum number of things. And how can we work together as a community to make this happen?
David, thank you so very much for your call. We're going next to Harrisonburg. Ruth, thank you for calling in. Your question or comment for our guests, please.
Yeah, I was on my bike yesterday. I try to go out most days, but I do live on a steep hill. Mount Clinton Pike leads up to where I live, and it's too dangerous. So I have to keep my bike at the bottom of the hill, and then I can ride around in the EMU area, College Avenue, and so on. But what I'd like to see is a bike garage that would be, you know, I'd pay $10 a month to have my bike there, and I can walk or drive to that garage, and then I've got lots of access to the whole town and the Parkview area of town. But I need a bike garage, and if we had that, people who live in hilly areas could still get to their bike and do a lot of riding around in the community and then park their bike again. So I wish
Ruth, hang on for us. We're going to hit the break soon, but Thomas Jenkins, who's from Harrisonburg, he could give us at least the beginning of a response to your point.
Ruth, I know the area you're talking about. Mount Clinton Pike is a steep hill on both sides, and once you get on the east side of that hill, you are in the Parkview area, which is a great area for cyclists because it's flat and relatively low traffic area. So I think you're onto something there, and hopefully there's an entrepreneur listening and hopefully getting some ideas here.
Has there been any discussion that you're aware of, Thomas, of bike parking either in your community or elsewhere?
There has been discussions in our community about providing parking, whether it's downtown or near EMU, and covered facilities. There's a lot of people who live outside Harrisonburg who might drive into town, and they would like to, once they get here, then be able to ride. I think this would be popular by both universities, Eastern Mennonite as well as James Madison University.
Ruth, thank you so very much for your call. We're going to continue this update on cycling in the Old Dominion in a bit more than 1 minute. And when we get back, that data scientist that I mentioned earlier who has some safety-related news should be with us. sometimes avid cyclists probably do have the Indiana Jones movies theme music in their heads while pedaling around traffic. Maybe not so much the Temple of Doom in mind, but certainly racing away from possible danger at any turn. Well, safety in some places might be improved thanks to the work of our next guest. Joining us now by phone is a man who helped devise an intriguing method that cities across the country may someday be able to access in order to better understand how their roadways are being used by cyclists and others, and what sorts of city street improvements might then most easily be made. Data scientist Dr. Alec Goss, thank you so very much for joining us on Virginia Insight.
Oh, happy to be here.
So, Alec, can you tell us about the experiment, or actually the research and the design that you were doing? If I understand, you were at the University of Virginia, you were completing your doctorate, and you decided to try and use sort of in-place technology on city streets to gather data, for one thing, because it would be much more cost-effective.
That's correct. So I'm on the Citizen Transportation Advisory Committee for the Charlottesville Area Planning Organization, and one of the big problems that they faced in planning for better bicycle facilities was just simply data. There just were not the counts of who's biking where, of how does that vary by season, by weather, etc. And so I focused a fair bit of my dissertation work on that, and it was sort of in two parts. One was a general model of, given some observations of, you know, you're counting people here and there, what does that say about all the streets? And then having done that, it turned out that, well, okay, some still means, well, you need to really collect some data. And how can we do that effectively? And going out and buying expensive, you know, microwave radar sensors to sense bicycles is not feasible in most places in America. So they turned to using the cameras that are already on traffic signals to decide when a car is waiting to turn left or go straight or something like that. And can we use that those cameras to also count bicycles by doing some image processing, you know, with that video feed? So that was kind of the gist of the project.
Are these cameras, Alec, that actually take pictures, or are these basically sensing devices that can tell when a car is waiting for a traffic light?
Well, that's a good question. It depends on how you look at it. I mean, a camera is a camera. So there are video cameras. You know, they take moving video. But the only thing that's done with that information is it's run through essentially a small computer that decides, is a car waiting, yes or no? Or sometimes, you know, how many cars are waiting, something like that. And that's the end of it. And then the data is essentially thrown away. And so what we were working on doing is basically just adding another step of processing before you throw away that video data, which is, okay, instead of just deciding is someone waiting, figure out what kind of vehicle it is and figure out if you see them approach from one direction and then in another camera you see them leave going the other direction, then figure out, okay, a bicycle turned right or, you know, a semi-truck went straight. And from that, you get a lot of information about then inferring what traffic is, what bicycle traffic, what all kinds of traffic really is like in surrounding roadways and intersections as well. And so if you, and since enough of these traffic signals have these cameras, that if you actually did this on all the signals that have cameras, you'd have a pretty good picture over the whole city, over the whole area of what's going on.
So I'm pretty sure that Ruth Stornetta, Eric Kern, and or Thomas Jenkins, our in-studio guests, might have a follow-up question.
This is Thomas here from Harrisonburg. And one thing that we've been doing in the city about the past 2 years is basically bicycle and pedestrian counts. Mm-hmm. And we have been very limited due to volunteers because we're just sitting out there on a corner during a set time period. We feel that this information is valuable just to really get a history so we can see where we're going in the future. So it sounds like what you've worked on is something that can aid with that at basically and be cost effective. Is that correct?
Absolutely. I mean, that was so the original motivation was that. So Charlottesville does these counts twice a year in about 18 locations for, you know, a couple hours. I assume it's the same kind of thing that you're doing. And the problem was that while that's not no information, it's actually a lot of information, bicycle use is variable enough that just because you counted, you know, 43 bikes on a Wednesday evening doesn't mean that that's necessarily representative of even the next Wednesday. You know, it depends what was the weather like. Was there a special event? Was it, you know, was a college in session or not? You know, these things, there's a lot more variability in bicycle traffic. And so that was the original motivation is, okay, well, if we have, you know, we're collecting this data, and that's valuable, but it's not just looking at it in a spreadsheet doesn't tell us all that much. We need some way to sort of synthesize it into an overall picture of what's going on. And so that was exactly the motivation. But what brought on sort of the video counting work was that what, despite all the fancy statistics and everything, you still need some sensors that are out there counting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, continuously, to get a sense of overall trends in order to be able to then take account from an hour or two and come up with something that represents what's happening at that location for, you know, the whole year or at some time during the year. You need some continuous data. And that was the motivation then, was like, well, these cameras are already operating continuously. They're already sitting out there pointed at the roads. So, you know, could we use those to provide that continuous data? Because without that, you have a pretty hard time of coming up with of turning hourly counts into something that's really representative at a planning level.
And I understand that there are lots of challenges in designing a kind of model that would collect the data specifically that you were looking for and then be able to collate it into a useful form. You've completed your doctorate now, and you're now a data scientist at Commonwealth Computer Research and moved on to other research in your work life. I know Alec Gossman. Is this research that you helped get started at the University of Virginia still going on?
It is. It is the sort of the piece of it, the volume model piece is kind of, you know, I wrote a paper on that, and that's kind of that's continuing on in bits and pieces, and actually the Charlottesville MPO is working some to help implement that, hopefully.
The MPO?
The Metropolitan Planning Organization.
Okay.
Which is, and I don't know if Harrisonburg has one. Charlottesville, having more than 50,000 people, it's federally mandated that there's this organization that coordinates transportation planning between the city and surrounding Albemarle County and sort of combines planning for the whole urbanized area to try and...
Thomas is nodding his head, so I'm guessing Harrisonburg has one as well. So the research is continuing.
But it is continuing, and then a separate group of students are actually still working specifically on the video processing piece, the, you know, taking the cameras and then coming up with counts for that. So yes, it goes on, you know, and there's always the challenge of, you know, a formula, a piece of code is nice, but that's still a ways off from some device that you can write an instruction manual for and actually install, you know, in the field that a city can operate, you know, year after year.
Is that the hope, Alec Goss, that at some point this will lead to something that cities across the country can be using to emulate this kind of research and then make decisions on traffic, including cyclists, based on what they find?
Well, there's no doubt that there needs to be more data collection around non-motorized transport. That's absolutely true. But whether that's a technical problem or a political problem is still open for debate. So, you know, I was working on sort of a theoretically at least low-cost technical solution. Theoretically, I say, because, of course, until you can make it easy for everyone to use, you know, you got to have someone to sort of get it running. But, you know, the only reason that there's this big data difference between motorized transport and non-motorized transport is that it's not that it's cheaper to count cars, it's that we actually pay a lot of money to count cars, and we don't pay a lot of money to count things that aren't cars. And so whether the solution is, you know, coming up with these clever ways to do it a little more cheaply, or whether it's a matter of just reprioritizing our existing funds to balance between the modes, that I think is still open for debate.
Ruth Stornetta?
Yes, I think that this is really great research, and I'm looking forward to having it be implemented in the real world, because a bike data is so important and there's so little of it, as Alec mentioned. And in order to, you know, everybody says, oh, let's put in more bike lanes and more bike facilities. And without any way of evaluating if this is this the right place to put in a bike facility? Is this going to actually improve things for cyclists? Having this kind of data can really help people to make decisions to implement things that will be useful for the most people. And obviously, you know, we have limited budgets and we need to be able to decide how best to spend the money. So we want to do something to improve things that makes sense, that, you know, could use the existing data to create places that, where people already are biking, maybe to make it easier for them to connect routes and, you know, overcome these barriers, as Thomas was talking about. Certainly, you know, you'll probably see a difference in how many people are biking on hilly versus flat routes. And this is something that you need to take into account in devising your city bike plan. So this kind of data is so important and so useful for being able to devise a bike plan that makes sense.
Cyclist and cycling activist from Charlottesville, Ruth Stornetta. Cyclist and cycling activist from Harrisonburg, Thomas Jenkins. Cycling enthusiast from Stanton and member of the Stanton City Council, Eric Kern, are our in-studio guests here on Virginia Insight. And for just a few more minutes, we have with us by phone from Charlottesville, data scientist Alec Goss. Eric, you look like you had something you wanted to jump in with.
So I agree with Ruth from Charlottesville that if you can't measure something, it's very hard to come up with good policy about it. It's very hard to even think that it's important at all, to even see that it exists. So lacking good data on how many people ride bikes in our city, it's hard for us to know, you know, how big a constituency this is. And I like what Dr. Alex Goss is doing in the low-cost part. You know, I just had a briefing on the state budget last night, and it was very scary, the budget shortfall that they have in Richmond and how they're going to pass that along to localities. And this is not a temporary thing. I hate to be the bearer of bad tidings. This is something we're probably going to be seeing for years to come, is that the state budget is going to be cut in lots of different areas, and localities are going to have to pick up the pieces. And so low cost is going to be the key. If you want a city or county to do something that they don't do now, you're going to have to lead with low cost.
Now, one thing I think you have to also be careful about with this data is people will say, oh, there aren't very many cyclists out now, so why are we going to do anything for them? Because they aren't a big part of the constituency of the transportation mix. And certainly part of the reason that you might not have big numbers of cyclists is that most people don't feel safe riding in those places. And so if you can make a small improvement, you might see a big increase in cycling traffic. So I think it can be kind of a two-sided thing as far as using the data to justify improving cycling for people versus, oh, nobody's cycling here, so why should we build any facilities for cyclists? So it's a, you know, chicken and egg kind of thing. It, sort of, if you build it, they will come, but you also want to build it in the right place.
Alec Goss, do I understand correctly that there was a time some years back when you and your wife actually rode cross-country on your bicycles?
Yes, around more than 10 years ago.
So so you guys are obviously serious biking enthusiasts. Did you, and as you mentioned, it was more than 10 years ago, but did you have a sense that there were some places in the country that you pedaled through that were doing more of the kinds of things for cyclists that you'd like to see being done in Virginia?
Oh, sure, absolutely. I mean, the two sort of obvious places that came to mind that we went to are Boulder, Colorado, and Portland, Oregon. You know, Portland's a fairly large city, so it's not maybe as relevant to what's going on, you know, in Charlottesville or Harrisonburg or something like that. But Boulder, I think, is a great example of, you know, it's a small college town. They actually have the other pedestrian mall that's similar to the one in Charlottesville in the country. And they have an incredible network of bicycle facilities. Now, it's interesting that largely the reason that they do is that all of their you can go almost anywhere without crossing a street there. And the way they did that is they have a lot of stormwater drainage tunnels that already go under the streets, and so they just put the bike paths through them. You know, so there is always, in terms of, you know, realizing these goals, there's always this, you've got to capitalize on sort of what assets you have. But clearly there, I mean, the place that would be most notable in this case of talking about sort of how this change comes about is Davis, California, which has, since the 60s, been quite focused on making the city a place where you could happily walk and bike and feel safe doing it. And since the 60s, it has been that sort of place. And it wasn't in that case, there wasn't any particular reason that it would or wouldn't be that. It was that they decided to do that, that it was a goal. And I think that's, you know, I should mention I'm also an urban planner. And the thing that I think is missing from this debate sometimes is, what is the point of a road? What are our goals for the road? You know, transportation planning, as it's typically practiced, is essentially, here's someone who's going to drive. Let's figure out which road they'll drive on. But ultimately, that's not really, you're not maximizing something. You're not maximizing quality of life. You're not minimizing cost, really. You're shaving a few seconds off of a drive. But you're not looking at, how could I make this a better place to live? You know, speaking of just the general budget shortfall, if you look at, they've done studies on this, well, in Europe, you know, a single lane of an interstate can carry a little over 2,000 cars in an hour. The same lane, or maybe even a little bit narrower, can carry maybe 8,000 bikes in an hour. So if you think about that, you know, you can essentially, with the kind of traffic volumes that we have in this area, a two-lane road, if it were entirely carrying bicycles, could basically replace any facility in the area, just about. You know, with the exception of, you might need four lanes if you're replacing, like, Route 29 in Charlottesville. And you know, the maintenance cost would be practically negligible. You know, a bicycle doesn't do anything to the road. And so just at that level, before we even get into the whole question of how much we pay for healthcare and what an enormous savings it would be if everyone got a little more exercise, just from the infrastructure standpoint, you know, bicycle infrastructure is incredibly affordable. But in order for people to use it, as Ruth mentioned, you know, it is this chicken and the egg problem where not just if you build it, they will come, but if you create the conditions for that sort of lifestyle, for land use that supports shorter trips, for, you know, just valuing that kind of approach to getting around, then people will do it. And if you specifically disincentivize it by investing in a lot of auto-oriented infrastructure that can't really be well served by bicycles, then that's the real barrier. And because these things take a long time to change, you have to start now, and then in 20 years, you can see some real, you know, if you're talking about going from a mode share, what we have now, of like 2%, 1%, up to, you know, 10 or 20, that's going to take decades.
Civil engineer and data scientist, now with Commonwealth Computer Research Incorporated, but one of the originators of a fascinating new way of researching traffic patterns, particularly bicycle traffic patterns, when he was doing his doctoral research at the University of Virginia, Alec Goss. Dr. Goss, thank you so very much for making time for us here on Virginia Insight.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here.
We've got to pause for a break, but we're going to continue in just a bit more than 1 minute with cycling enthusiasts Ruth Stornetta, Eric Curran, and Thomas Jenkins. And you're invited to join in, too.
I ride my bicycle to work each day. It's not so far. It's better for me than my car. I wear a helmet that is made of rigid styrofoam, inspected by a French guy named Guillaume. I downshift my Shimano gears, I pedal hard and I'm out of here. Ooh, glad I am that the coast is clear, glad I am to be my bicycle and me.
Now, we don't know if Livingston Taylor lives in a really flat place or a really hilly place, but he certainly was singing about all things bicycle in that song, simply enough, called Bicycle. Stanton City Council member Eric Curran is a cycling enthusiast himself. He also serves as the City Council liaison to the Stanton Cycling Advisory Committee. Thomas Jenkins, co-owner of the Shenandoah Bicycle Company in Harrisonburg, has done mountain bike racing all over the country. These days, much of his cycling activism is with the Shenandoah Valley Bicycle Coalition. Ruth Stornetta is a past president of the Virginia Bicycling Federation and has long been active with the riding and advocacy group Bike Charlottesville. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. We have a post here on the Virginia Insight Facebook page coming in from Julian. Julian says, a question from overseas but still relevant. What holds people back from biking? What measures could local authorities put in place for people to feel safer and happier to bike? How can a culture of biking be developed? And how can it be made hip? Thomas Jenkins, let's toss Julian's series of questions to you first.
The key, I think, to answer all these questions is providing a specific type of facility to get over one of the biggest barriers, and that is feeling safe. And how best to do that is providing facilities that separate cyclists from cars. That enables children to get out and ride. It enables new cyclists to get out and ride. As long as we're just adding bike lanes and sharing space with cars, that is a big barrier for new cyclists. Alec mentioned, you know, areas like Davis, California, areas that have a high percentage of mode share of cycling and walking. Those communities like Davis, California, Portland, Oregon, Minneapolis, they have a great infrastructure of separate use facilities. So I think really to have a hip cycling culture, it starts with children and it goes all the way to senior citizens. And those two ends of the spectrum are best really served with separate use facilities.
I think that another thing that will help to improve people's feelings of safety about riding a bike is to have an attitude shift of drivers. And I think it's very important for drivers to be on the lookout for cyclists and pedestrians, what we would call vulnerable users of the road. And rather than have the onus be on the vulnerable user, the onus of responsibility and safety should really be on the driver. These people that have thousands of tons of metal and glass protecting them from the rest of the environment. Versus
Stornetta, you and other cycling advocacy groups across the Commonwealth were pushing once again earlier this year to have that change in law made where the onus for responsibility for preventing an accident, preventing injury in a shared road space between a pedestrian, a cyclist, and somebody with a motorized vehicle was going to be on the motorized vehicle. How did that effort to change the law go?
Well, I think we've made some real progress, actually, in getting one of the laws passed to ensure that cyclists have adequate space when a car passes them. And that's the 3-foot law. So Virginia Bicycling Federation has been pushing for years to get this law passed in Virginia. It's been passed in many, many other states across the country, and it's considered one of the requisites for being a bike-friendly state is to have the law that says cars have to leave 3 feet between the car and the cyclist when they're passing a bike. So that,
and that did pass.
It did pass, and we were all very happy about that because that makes the driver have to think about it, you know, that the cyclist needs space and that they don't have any protection and that they are a vulnerable road user that requires the driver to really think about what they're doing when they approach and pass a cyclist. So I think that that's great, and that's helping us further this attitude that, you know, cycling is okay. It's a good thing. And to take care when you're driving around cyclists.
There is another aspect of your efforts, though, that involved an actual shift in law so that the onus for responsibility would be on motorists. And so far that has not succeeded?
No, not. And we haven't necessarily phrased it exactly in those terms. So,
well, phrase it in better terms for me, please. I was making it up as I was going along.
No, but I do think that this sort of vulnerable user law has been passed in other states.
So that's the vulnerable user law, in essence, says that first responsibility for avoiding an accident or other kinds of problem is on the motorist.
That's correct.
You're You're nodding your head there, Thomas Jenkins.
No, I was just agreeing with that. You know, I think the cyclists are always kind of the ones, a lot of times, that get the blame, and we need to educate. I think a big component of this is educating car drivers. And, you know, we're talking about this three feet space. I think if the average listener put their hands 3 feet apart, they would realize even that is still minimal space, and the previous 2 feet was totally unacceptable.
Going next to Stanton Lee. Thank you for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment for Thomas Jenkins, Eric Kern, and or Ruth Stornetta, please.
Well, I know a lot of those people because approximately 15 years ago, I was hit by a car while cycling. And there was no formal bicycling club available to do the planning. And I found that Bonnie Reidesel, who is the assistant planning director in this area, supported us. We got a $50,000 grant, and there are 40 identified routes in the five counties, Rockbridge, Rockingham, Augusta, Rockbridge. No, I said that.
Lee, I'm sorry. I got a little bit lost there. I heard at one point that you were talking about the fact that as a cyclist about 15 years ago, you were hit by a motorized vehicle.
Right.
And then it sounds to me like you're talking about something that's going on currently that involves planning for better cycling safety? Am I tracking you correctly?
You are. And I'll be brief. Hi, Eric, and some of the other folks I know there, Thomas. Yes, there is a planning district-wide master plan for the five counties and the five cities. It's predicated on a grant that was received by the planning district in cooperation with VDOT. So there are 40 lanes. Now, most of the activity that's going on is happening in Harrisonburg, Bridgewater area.
Lee, what kind of activity? What are we talking about with this plan? Something about
cycling,
bike lanes? Or
cycling lanes.
Okay. And so is this anything, Eric Curran, Stanton City Council member, that you're nodding your head, but you're far away from the microphone. Can you tell us a little bit about this?
So the Stanton Bicycle Advisory Group came up with a report, and they followed the format of the League of American Bicyclists, who have four or five criteria that make a city bicycle friendly, and they have levels of bicycle friendliness. I don't know if they're platinum, gold, and silver, but I think it's something like that. And so these E's are things like encouragement, enforcement, education, engineering. And so it's a whole holistic package. It's not just that we're putting in bike lanes, or even like Thomas from Harrisonburg said, that we're putting in separate amenities for bicyclists, which is even better than bike lanes. And it's what Ruth said, you know, it's educating the drivers, not just the bicyclists, but the drivers to be bicyclist aware. And so this group who put together this report also identified some funding sources. And I think this was one of the funding sources they discussed. So there is money out there for localities to put in these bicycle amenities and to do these other E's as well, the education, the engineering, the enforcement.
When you say bicycle amenities, the first thing that comes to mind for me is bike lanes. But I suspect that you're talking about something far in addition to that.
Yeah, and I would love to hear what Thomas has to say, because he brought up the separate bicycling amenities. I can imagine things like underpasses, overpasses, but Thomas, do you have some other stuff in mind?
Well, I think one of the things you know, Lee, our caller, was talking about is kind of going back to the basis, is having a good bicycle pedestrian plan in place. And I think that's kind of the key to get any of these amenities started.
So are you familiar with the five-county master plan that Lee was talking about?
Yes, with the Central Shenandoah Valley Planning District. And that was and is a great tool. And one of the things he's probably talking about is some of the routes that have been identified. And I would say most
places where bike lanes could be put in.
Bike lanes could be good, put in, or just good riding facilities. And that's just one, having a good plan like that without a good plan, you can't go after funding. And I think that is one of the keys.
And Lee, was that part of the point that you wanted to make, is that the plan is there and now we need the money?
Exactly. And another element is that VDOT is behind it. And we found out during the research phase that no matter where they paint the center lines, the way VDOT has worked before has to put the asphalt almost all the way to the edge of the road, leaving no more than 6 or 8 inches of riding area. But that element, and VDOT has been cooperative, it's just the lack of money, as they're both saying.
And Lee, I'm so sorry that we're running short on time, but you've given us some good stuff to think about. Thank you so very much. Thank you so very much for taking the time to call us.
I wanted to give another example of the separated bike facilities that we're just starting to see come in Charlottesville. We've got some buffered bike lanes now on Rose Hill Drive, and it's actually at this point just paint on the road. But nonetheless, it gives us a little bit more space.
Tell me what a buffered bike lane looks like.
So a buffered bike lane has a 5 foot wide space for cyclists, and then about 2 or 3 feet of striped diagonal paint that is a zone, a buffer zone, essentially, between the bike lane and the car travel lane. So this gives us a little bit more space and feeling of comfort that we're that much more separated from the cars rather than a single stripe of paint. One of the plans just coming in for West Main Street will involve some of these buffered bike lanes, but in this case, the buffer will actually be a little sort of strip of dirt where trees can be planted in between the bike lane and the parked cars. So this gives us even more buffer from the travel lane, from the car travel lanes, where we'll have a parked car and a little strip with some street trees, and then the bike lane. So this is the kind of separation that I think people will be feeling more comfortable, especially those first-time cyclists, people who are interested in cycling, who would like to cycle but don't feel safe about doing it right now.
Eric Kern, in the little bit more than 1 minute that we've got left, there's a political issue I was hoping that you would address for us. Often what cycling advocates have told us in the past is people who make decisions at the state legislative and the local government level assume cars first. The roads are made for cars, and if we add amenities for bicycles, then that's a nice thing maybe to add in. And trying to get a mentality changed where in the cities that Alec Goss was mentioning earlier, whether it's Davis, California, or Portland, Oregon, or Boulder, Colorado, where it's become extremely bike-friendly, much like I think you would like to see Stanton, it's really hard to get a mindset changed any place in Virginia and most places in the country if the assumption is roads are for cars. Do you see a way that if people who want to be able to bike more, would like there to be a bike-friendly environment, that they can do something to push in that direction?
So I think on any issue that citizens care about, they need to understand that local government is mostly reactive. We don't really lead on much. We're not really about new ideas. We're about keeping your stuff working. We want the potholes paved, and we want the school buses to run. So if you want us to do something new, you need to get the ball rolling. That's how all great movements in American history have started. The Civil Rights Movement is the finest example. And so citizens could do what they did in Stanton. A bike club got together with another bike club, and they said, what would we want to happen in town? They came up with some ideas. Then they put together a presentation. They asked to get on the city council agenda. They made their presentation. Then they packed the room afterwards. They wrote letters to the editor. They did stuff on Facebook. This is really an opportunity for citizen activists to take their democracy, pick it up, and not leave it on the table.
Our guests have been Ruth Stornetta, former president of the Virginia Bicycling Federation and long active with the group Bike Charlottesville, Thomas Jenkins, former professional mountain bike racer, now co-owner of the Shenandoah Bicycle Company in Harrisonburg and active with the group Shenandoah Valley Bicycle Coalition, plus longtime cycling enthusiast and current city council member in Stanton, Virginia, Eric Curran. Thank you all so very much for making time for us.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Tom.
Thanks.
Podcasts of this program are available on the Virginia Insight tab at WMRA.org. When you get to the page for today's broadcast, you will see links to more information about all of our guests.